He drives one high and deep into right center field towards the Red Sox bullpen. It is back and it is off the top of the wall, and it caroms into center field. This could be an inside the park homer. Abreu runs third. He gets the go ahead. He comes home. Head first slide. Inside the park homer for Willier Abreu.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
WEEI Afternoons here in our beautiful Brighton studio powered by Verizon. If you're watching on Twitch, you can see that Fitzy is enjoying a little 4th of July week fireworks in the backdrop. I love good fireworks. I know there's a lot of Mego just left the midday show, and she's not a fan of fireworks, and Rich Keefe doesn't like fireworks. A lot of dog owners don't care for fireworks because they bother the pets, and you got to give them drugs or safe spaces or whatever. But I like a good 4th of July firework. Nick Fitzy Stevens, how's your fireworks doing?
They going off, baby.
They banging? Poppin'. They popping? They banging? You know who's banging and popping? The Boston Red Sox.
Oh, I see what you did there. Let me guess. Willier Abreu and the Red Sox offense put on a fireworks show last night at Fenway.
Well, you know what I thought last night was a living
Monday
ad for baseball isn't boring. Because last night's game didn't go really any way you might have expected it. We were joking about, oh, there's going to be a ton of strikeouts. Oh, Crochet is going to be on the mound. Like,
you were the one who made sure to tell the audience to cash in their kids' 529s and bet all the strikeouts between the two starting pitchers.
Then they lost money with me because I made the mistake of parlaying those, because you got the over on Garrett Crochet's K's. You did not get the over with Chase Burns, who would have needed a strikeout before he could go over on his strikeout total.
I don't have a gun, let alone multiple guns, Stacy, that would necessitate a gun rack. Yeah, he was super bad. That was actually an unpredictably bad performance by a bright, talented young hurler in the National League.
Who apparently potentially was tipping his pitches. Because
seems to have been, yeah.
Yes. More likely than not that he was tipping his pitches.
Tippy McPitch.
Yeah, and so it didn't matter that he was throwing 100 miles an hour and on the soft pitches would throw 99. From Jaron Duran straight on through, they were on Chase Burns. They chased him early, scored 7 runs in the first inning, and even did a little flipping of the script. Because the Reds made a nice error on a would-be double play ball, and the floodgates opened. And that's usually something we see from the Red Sox. Oh, let's make a stupid error and let the other team score 7 runs in the first inning and the game's over. Nope. Shoe was on the other foot last night. And you know what I kind of did? I kind of enjoyed it, Fitzy. Baseball is entertaining sometimes when it's unpredictable and unexpected.
Yeah, I would have still preferred to have seen Crochet kind of just dominate and never give the Reds a breath of hope last night as well, because when it was 8-5, 9-5, you first look and you see 7-0, and the average baseball fan at that point would think this is a blowout, or all right, so this is a game I don't have to tune into unless I wanted on as white noise in the background, because it shouldn't be that competitive. 8-5, we got a little bit of the old palm sweaties right there. Like, that got way too close. Listen, people give up home runs. A lot of humidity in the air. The ball was flying last night at the old friendly Fenway as well. So that's to be understood. He's not always going to have his best stuff. This does beg a question. When you have a big lead, I don't know if this is something that he does on the regular or maybe just last night with confidence in his offense. Did he take his foot off the gas a little bit?
Well, see, that's why I have no fear of Garrett Crochet and him allowing some runs and it getting a little tighter than maybe you would have liked, because the first 3 innings after he got the lead, he was fine. He was dominant. He was awesome. And then it did seem like maybe he let up, whatever. You know, you can't be perfect all the time. He did get his first win at Fenway Park. His previous 7 wins were away, so the home crowd got to actually see a Garrett Crochet win. But I just think it's human nature that not only did you get a big lead, but you came right out and continued to dominate after the big lead. So at some point it's like, you take a little bit of a breath. And, you know, Will Middlebrooks was talking in the broadcast even early on that, you know, you're probably not going to get vintage Crochet tonight because he's going to pitch for the strike zone. He's going to pitch to contact. He's going to pitch with a lead. He's going to do those things. Now, I'm with you. I don't know that I need De La Cruz coming to the plate basically with the potential of tying the game kind of situation. Mm-mm. That's a little more than I would like.
There. Nope.
But, you know, for a guy who they wanted to manage his stress on the arm and innings and pitches, if he does that naturally and says, you know, I don't really need to dig all in and have my best night and be, you know, this every pitch is not a high leverage pitch in this game kind of situation.
So, that could be kind of an output.
Yeah,
I won't say load maintenance, but basically an output maintenance effort by yep. Crochet, thinking so long as I give them 85% of my best stuff, keep us in the lead. A win is a win at this point now. That, you know, there can be a selflessness, like a good teammate, attaboy, Pat, that you give someone on that one, because he did they did never cede the lead. It didn't get that close, although, like you said, there were some, or at least there was a at bat where the tying run was at the plate. That said, they never trailed all night long. And then, of course, later on in the game, Mr. I'm always good for multiple RBI when we don't need all those extra RBI, Willie Abreu, took over the game as well. He's in such a fascinating character because his offense comes in bunches.
Yep.
There's just, again, back to what I was saying yesterday on the program, consistency. If this ball club could teach itself big league consistency, I swear they would be a force to be reckoned with, or at least a legitimate playoff contender. But when they ride these ebbs and flows of like 13 runs one night, 2, 14, 0, 1, 5, that's also the combination to Stiz's bike lock. That becomes an issue. It becomes an issue, and that's how they can't string together series wins and multiple wins, Andy.
Well, it's like Bradfoe told us yesterday, take your run differential and stick it up your bum, basically, because the big games are swaying the statistics. They got two games now in the last three games where they've scored whatever it is, 13-plus runs, and that's how you're a plus 17 run differential. It's not really that. You're a negative run differential team, and I know you're not. Like, the numbers are what they are, and the stats are what they are, but if you just remove a couple of these big games that are, you know, some of the runs are borderline meaningless late, and you know, early in the year there was the Cardinals one, there was the last couple days. Like, that changes all your statistics. But I will say, the number that did jump out at me, 31 runs in the last three games after 30 in the prior 11, maybe you're starting to trend, because a one-off double-digit game, okay, we can just dismiss that and be annoyed by that. And well, if you do it twice and start to talk yourself into, are they getting healthy? Have they turned a corner? Is Abreu getting hot? Is Duran turning a corner? Roman Anthony is quietly and slowly turning a corner from the sub 100 average he had not that long ago. Bregman is feeling great. He's working out. He's ahead of schedule. If you are prone, which I feel like we are prone on WEEI afternoons, to being optimistic about the Boston Red Sox. If
ball washers.
Okay, ball washers. Water carriers, whatever you mm-hmm. want to call us, mm-hmm. Cora pals or Cora excuse makers. I do think you could say maybe they're trending in the right direction. Now, there are also, you know, a lot of issues where we're still apparently going to keep running Walker Buehler out there, despite the fact that Dan Ball called his career over like a week and a half ago, and they continue to say he's going to keep making starts, apparently.
It still is. They just seem to disagree.
It's over. They just don't know it yet. They haven't told him yet.
Feels like the Sixth Sense, the baseball edition.
So am I reading too much into this? Like, is there any, if you want to convince yourself they're turning a positive corner, do you feel anything of that nature, Fitzy?
If this was to be the dynamic offense we thought it was going to be all the way back in April on a consistent basis, then perhaps this three-game sample size could be proof of concept. However,
I've heard that.
I think it is too small a sample size at this point. You can't just base an entire way of thinking or a second half of a season off of one game in the middle of a three-game series at home that, sadly, you lost, and then the first game against a National League team managed by definitely your greatest manager of all time. They need to be able to do this all the way to the All-Star break. Yes, it'll be against some inferior MLB opponents. You have the Nationals coming up. Of course, you're going to get some games against everybody's favorite AA squad, the Rockies. If the Red Sox can keep this up for 2 weeks, tilt the tables into a positive record, actually have a winning record on the season, they're still 42-44. And yes, they do have to go 50-26 to reach 92-70, our win target here on WEEI Afternoons. It's a lot of work to do, so a little too early, but it's a nice start if it's meant to be.
Dan Ball, the one simple stat that I've been following all year long for this offense isn't run differential, run scored, batting average. It's strikeouts.
Oh, yeah.
Last night was one of those games. Coincidence that you only strike out five times and you put up 13 runs? I think not. I still say, if this damn team would undriveline themselves and put the GD baseball in play more often, they would be a much better baseball. It's that simple for me.
And it's as simple as looking at yourself in the mirror and realizing we no longer have the players that are going to hit home runs or strike out, and we're going to win games that way. When you lose, when you trade Devers, you lose Bregman, you lose Casas, a team that maybe was designed to hit bombs and, you know, hit for extra bases and whatever else, just doesn't exist anymore. So it would be prudent to recognize what you're
saying. And to be fair, last night is probably their dream scenario because they only struck out five times and they hit four home runs. They're almost in an even home run to strikeout ratio.
Five Ks, and we set the over-under at 10.5, so good job, Sox.
Well, good job, Sox. Bad job, Burns. Good job, Cora. Whatever you saw that clearly turned into something early on. The poor guy, I kind of felt bad for him. I think I've grown more of a conscience of late in the sports world because, like, Walker Buehler.
Why start now?
I feel bad for him. This guy, Chase Burns, I feel bad for him. Like, you know, to go from one start earlier, he makes his major league debut and he strikes out the first six batters. And then the very next time he takes the mound, the other team is batting him around like he's a freaking piñata because, I don't know, he wiggles his nose before he throws his off-speed pitch or his slider or whatever. Whatever the hell they were seeing. Yes, Dan Ball.
Duran caught it, by the way. After the first at-bat of the game, his elbow and the way he was holding his glove were different, fastball and breaking ball. So Duran caught it, went back, told Abreu. You could see him on the broadcast covering his mouth and telling him.
I saw that, yeah.
And they ripped him apart after that.
Yeah, there was a screen cap last night that went around of Duran leaning over like, by the way, you'll notice his elbow and glove are in a different position.
I love that. And I said it to Mego and Jones in the crossover. That tells you the fine line between success and failure as a hitter in Major League Baseball. So this is I think we have all agreed this is not a very good offensive Red Sox baseball team of late. And the pitcher they were facing, his slow pitch goes 99, his fast pitch goes 100. Like, that's what he does. And because you just had an idea of what was coming, not the slider, the fastball, you bat around in the first inning and send him to the bullpen with just one out. It's just, I find that so fascinating, that little bit. And there's other aspects, you know, if you're the hitter, you're the pitcher, whatever, little aspects. But the fine line between a massive success and a massive failure. And I also find it interesting, like, nobody on the Reds sees this? Don't they have a bunch of employees that are probably supposed to look for these things? Don't they have a pitching coach who analyzes in video form every throw their most prized prospect makes? And they didn't notice, hey, you're really look. It's kind of obvious which pitch you're throwing here. How did they not pick up on it?
Yeah, I was just trying to think if there was another sport where somebody could tip or accidentally give a heads up to their opponent as to what they were doing. And I think the only place would be football, where perhaps the quarterback is in a different stance if it's going to be a run versus a pass.
Yep.
Same thing with your center, depending on his motion, if he's going to be shotgun or run or, you know, going to his left or his right. Like, these little these little things that sometimes people become blissfully unaware of can make a massive difference. Now, look, the result may have still been the same last night. The Red Sox probably could and should have defeated them. But that kid accidentally put them in such a hole last night, like, you know, against an offense that's starting to feel itself a little bit and one of the five best pitchers in baseball on the mound. Like, we could have just called it after the first inning, but, you know, there was still a lot of hot dogs and popcorn to sell.
Elsewhere, Jordan Hicks made his Red Sox debut, came in from the pen.
He did, my favorite new pitcher.
And I think that was perfect, a perfect situation for him. He comes in, he throws 10 pitches, 7 strikes, gets a strikeout. He was up by 100 miles an hour and not in a high leverage situation necessarily, but, you know, kind of breaking the ice on his career. And we are going to monitor this. We've talked about this. I know a lot of people want to put to bed the Rafi Devers trade and the return and all these things, but Harrison, what's he doing in the minor leagues? Hicks, what's he doing now in the major leagues in the bullpen? This is going to be monitored and compared to whatever the Giants are doing and Devers is doing, which, spoiler alert, is not much. He is in a horrific slump. He's striking out a lot, and they are a losing baseball team with him.
What, did he get traded to another league where there's a whole different bunch of pitchers he's got to become familiar with?
No, maybe he's sulking again. He's striking out a lot, and you remember when he sulked to start the year, he struck out a lot, so maybe that's sulky Devers getting it done out there in San Francisco. But Jordan Hicks, that's going to be a good sign to add if you're Breslow especially, like, hey, one of those guys that I got in that Devers trade could actually help us win baseball games at some point this year.
Yeah, that's he's one of four. These guys already have with minimal potential contributions, there's a chance for them to actually contribute more than the lump sum of players that the Red Sox got back in the Mookie Betts trade, which, of course, our wounds got salted over the weekend when it was posted that Mookie Betts had the highest overall aggregate WAR in baseball over the last 5 years. Hang on, we can't get players like that. I would like to issue a show challenge to us. I don't know if we can. It probably can't be a station-wide mandate. I would like to issue push-ups. A show challenge, a challenge, if you will, that we see how many days we can go without mentioning Rafi Devers' name.
I don't think we can go more than one, basically. Get one of those things, days since last injury,
yeah,
or whatever.
Exactly, days site. Since last incident, days since last, you know, crime, incident, whatever. Like, we should have just like a chart with the numbers that flip down. If we could go 10 would be incredible. If we could go a week without mentioning
a week,
there's no way. But he now bears no impact on our baseball club, our lives, the quality of your day on a boat, my sleep, nothing. Like, it's done. We have to move. Don't we have to collect?
Nothing is over. Nothing.
Heal? Isn't it time to heal? Isn't it time to move on collectively?
It's time to spend his damn money. That's what it's time to do, and that's going to be an aspect of discussion.
Okay, that would be a great time to bring it up. Like, if in 2 weeks the Red Sox make a huge move and trade out a bunch of prospects and bring on, you know, Wrighty McBaseman, and boy, this guy is awesome, and what a tremendous, you know, insert Kyle Tucker wannabe Pete Alonso-esque player here. Holy smokes. Then you can say, and with the money from the Rafael Devers deal, the Red Sox were able to comfortably make this move. And what an addition for a team whose offense caught fire as the calendar turned from June to July 2025. Gauntlet has been dropped. I'd like for us all to try to move.
Yeah, on. We're going to fail miserably. There's going to be one-day streaks at the most there. We're not even going to be able to have a two-day streak in that, in my opinion. I don't do this often here on WEEI Afternoons, but I'm going to go to the phone lines early. First segment, Bob in Warwick, because he seems to have an optimistic subject line. Bob, what's up?
Mr. Number One.
Very optimistic that the Red Sox are going to go on another seven-game losing streak.
All right, thanks for the call, Bob.
Bob!
I also get rid of Bob quickly. He said they turned a corner was the question mark. I wanted some positivity in the first segment from the phone lines. Bob, you disappointed me. Call back anytime, though. It was nothing personal, Bob. I was just looking for a little optimism after the Red Sox win 13-6. They run last year's number two overall pick after, I think, seven runs in the first inning, whatever the hell it was. Poor guy could barely get an out. He certainly didn't get it over on the K's. Yes, Dan Ball.
Bob's back. Do you want to give him another chance?
All right, put him right back. Let's go.
Okay,
let's go right to the air.
Give me 30 seconds. I just got to put him through to you.
Okay. Put him through to me because I feel bad. Hey, Bob, you're back, buddy.
Yeah, buddy. How come they keep cutting me off?
I don't know. It's very rude, but you're on the air, Bob. You're on the air, Bob. Let's go. What are your thoughts?
We'll talk to the host about that.
Is somebody there?
Okay.
Hello?
Well, there's somebody here. Sorry, Bob. We tried attempt number two. That's going to do it for the first segment.
I thought he was coming back and being positive.
I thought he was.
Guys, when you see Bob and Warwick on the call screener, the reason why I always say Mr. Number One Red Sox fan when the call comes through is because he's a Yankee fan that hates the Red Sox and relishes in our misery.
Jeez. He wanted to talk about them turning the corner, and then he was very, very negative. Up next here on WEEI Afternoons, we'll continue to talk about the Boston Red Sox, but we also need to touch on the Celtics and the Bruins. We are in the midst of free agency. The Bruins are adding guys that don't really necessarily feel like they're going to be impact guys. The Celtics are kind of adding, but it feels like so far it's been net losses that we have to get used to at this point for a Celtics team that I am suddenly worried is putting too much on the very broad shoulders of somebody named Jaylen Brown. Ted Johnson will join us at the top of the 3 o'clock hour. And remember, 5:30, Quiz with Stiz. Ted Johnson defends his crown against Nick Fitzy Stevens. The undefeated, undisputed champion is rolling. That's all next here on WEEI Afternoons. But first, Dan Ball, give me what's trending.